now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to the game. I'm Santa Claus here with a 40-minute gift of football. Ho, ho, ho. My elves this week are Patty Barkley, Peter Lansley, and the unlikeliest elf you'll find. It's Mr. Pedro Pinto, who's also, of course, making his debut on the game podcast. We'll be discussing a variety of Christmas crackers and turkeys, but let's start at Santa's Grotto, otherwise known as Stamford Bridge. Right, Chelsea and Fulham, I want to start with what, in different circumstances, might have been the most noteworthy part of all. This man with bleach blonde hair, tall, athletic-looking, starting up front, a guy called Fernando Torres. Patty, were you expecting this?
Well, sooner or later, yes, it had to happen with all the games coming along. He had to start. It's been very unfortunate for Torres. He was just coming into form earlier in the season, just before he got his suspension. He's now back to square one. He can't be oblivious to everything that's being said about him, but he genuinely was playing well before. But we're still not seeing it yet. But I kind of feel that we will before the end of the season.
Well, I suppose we kind of have to. I mean, Didier Drogba is going away. I'm not sure Villas-Boas knows who Solomon Kalou is. And of course, Romelu Lukaku. You know, I think, Pedro, you have a bigger chance of starting for Chelsea right now than he does.
If it's on size, he still beats me out on having a bigger chance. But if you would come and watch Fernando Torres for the first time, you'd have no clue that this is a guy who scored the game-winning goal in the Euro 2008 final. I mean, he is just bad. There's no other way around it. He's not fast anymore. He's not sharp anymore. He's not confident anymore. I feel sorry for him.
Peter, I guess this is the flip side. You sign somebody for huge amounts of money. You give him a huge contract. It's kind of like for being married, right? I mean, you're kind of in it for better and for worse, and on a divorce would be extremely expensive for Chelsea, which is why I think we can probably write off all those stories about them, you know, selling him for a cut price, 15, 20 million, whatever it is.
I know, where do you go with him? Because if it was a player who'd come up through the ranks or someone you'd nurtured and you then had a loss of confidence, you can think, okay, well, back in the world of football in, you know, a past generation, send him out on loan, get his confidence up. But you can't send Fernando Torres out on loan to Barnsley or something, can you? And Paddy says, we will see him come good, we have to. And you kind of think, well, he's got the class, he's got the heritage, he's got the faith, my goodness, from the club. But I just don't see how it's going to come good for him. They seem to have changed systems for him over the last year, and yet nothing's worked for him, has it?
Now, I want to take a look at Fulham, and I think we need to switch our attention to how Villas-Boas reacted to Fulham. I was at this game, and I'm looking at the players on the pitch. You know, you could go in, and when you don't have the benefit of the team sheet, and I'm like, gee, who is this guy up front? And I said, it couldn't be him, could it? Because I see this sort of, you know, sort of 5'11-ish guy who looks like a miniature Grant Holt, you know, with like the big legs and the big head and the short, you know, arms. And he looks like one of those, you know, old English style target men who you've sort of put through the dryer and he's shrunk. And it's Orlando Sá, who might not be familiar to most, but Orlando, this is only his second start in the league for Fulham. And Orlando Sá was at Porto last year with Villas-Boas, actually, where he didn't play very much. There's this guy named Fry on the wing. I'm like, who's this guy? And he's, you know, a teenage Swiss guy who's making his first start for Fulham. I look up and down the lineup in this midfield, the closest thing they have to holding midfielder in the sense that he sat in front of the back four was Danny Murphy. Now, Danny Murphy reads the game well and everything, is a skillful passer, but you know, he's not exactly Lee Cattermole when it comes to tackling. And so I thought this was a remarkable lineup that Martin Yule put out there. He had a lot of injuries, a lot of absentees. Now, it's awkward because it's an unorthodox lineup, although not that different from the way Yule has played before. But wouldn't you expect Villas-Boas to take countermeasures? I mean, he is supposed to be the tactician. Mm-hmm. It's one thing when your players let you down, or when you've got old players or bad players or whatever. Yep. But tactics is supposed to be his forte.
Look, Villas-Boas has no plan B, all right? That's the problem right now. He's got one way of playing. He believes in the 4-3-3. He lives and dies by it. And one of the reasons why Torres hasn't had more chances to play recently is because he plays with one man up front. And Torres is someone who can't play on the wing, and he shouldn't play on the wing. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why Anelka got upset, and one of the reasons why he's leaving. I think there needs to be another way of playing at Chelsea. He can't just have this one system, because teams will know how to defend against
him. But even within the system, you can tweak it. I mean, if I'm playing against a center forward who clearly can't run, and he's up there on his own, then maybe that's one where I play with a higher line, or as Villas-Boas might say, the high block. No, I mean there are adjustments. I mean you can go out there and say, all right, we're better than Fulham, we'll just muller them in the first half. But when that clearly is not happening, isn't this when you make an adjustment?
I also think that there isn't still a creative player in midfield at Chelsea. Juan Mata, many people might not have seen him that often at Valencia, but he was a forward. He was not someone who was setting up goals. He played with Soldado but up front, but they worked in tandem together. At Chelsea, he's mostly on the wing. I don't think he's fast enough to be a great winger. That's just my opinion. Yeah, he's not going to be someone who's going to create goals out of nothing. Very good player, but not a playmaker. They still don't have one.
I think the goal they scored yesterday points to the future for Chelsea. I completely agree with Pedro. I think that Mata is a forward. I don't think he's a wide forward in our game, and I think that to have him playing behind Torres is the ideal way forward. A sort of 4-4-1-1 or something like that. And I think that...
That leaves no room for Daniel Sturridge in your lineup.
No, not necessarily.
Well, you're going to play Daniel Sturridge in midfield?
Yes.
You'll love that.
Well, I mean, you know, that's tough. You know, I mean, you could play Daniel Sturridge as a centre-forward, or you could play him on the right where he is effective.
If you play Daniel Sturridge as centre-forward, then you don't play... Then Torres, which might actually be his plan B when Drogba was away.
Yeah, I'm just trying to respond to what you're saying. I mean, I completely agree that this 4-3-3 thing is, I think it's a very flawed system. I genuinely don't really like it that much. And I do wish that Villas-Boas would try something a bit different.
How about this one then? How about if you played 4-2-3-1 and you had Mata, Sturridge, then you could afford to, I know he seems to be on the way out, but you could have Malouda on the wide of those three, behind Torres, behind Drogba.
Frank Lampard's going to love that.
Frank Lampard's nearly finished. I think we're talking about the future, and I think Lanza's got it absolutely right. 4-2-3-1, I think, is the best system that's come into football since 2-3-5. I really like this system, and I think Lanza's has got it absolutely right. I think Mata could certainly play in that. So could Sturridge. Obviously, it'd be, you wouldn't have room for Kalou, but any system that had room for Kalou would be flawed intrinsically.
Kalou, thanks you again. I want to give some credit here to Martin Yule, though, because, as I said, it might have been from by necessity, but when you look at the two midfields, that his was basically 4-1-4-1. His line of four was this, you know, on the wings you had Kareem Fry, who whatever is this,
he's a
winger
quick.
Type, very
lightning
quick. Yeah. On the other wing, he had Brian Rees, who's taken him a while to get going, but whatever.
Fabulous feet.
But inside, yeah, great feet, but inside, how about technique? You had Dembele, Musa, who you can't get the ball off the guy,
yeah.
and Dempsey.
Yeah.
And behind them, you have Murphy, who can pass as well. I mean, I just want to say by this idea of the, do you need the destroyer in midfield if you're Fulham? I know it might have been by necessity in other games. He might have had a two in there and whatever. But I was very impressed with this. Is this something that could we see a football like this again? Could somebody try to replicate this?
You need a destroyer if you're a team that attacks. If you're a team that defends, you don't necessarily need someone who's just going to tackle because you do it as a group.
Yeah.
You defend as a group and you occupy space. So if you don't have a hard tackler like Fulham didn't in that game, then you can afford that because you've got everyone crowding the ball around and no one's going to get in trouble on their own trying to mark someone else.
I'm only guessing, but the Fulham's previous game, which they lost 5-0, was against Manchester United. They played with central midfielders were Carrick and Giggs, and they were the two best players on the field by a long, long way. And there are other ways of holding the midfield. If you hold the ball, you don't need a holding midfield player. And I think that that may have, I don't know, who knows, it may have given Joel food for thought. Having said that, I personally think that yes, you can try it now and again, but by and large, you need a defensive midfield player or two to have a functional football team. But you don't always need to, as Fulham and Manchester United have proved.
Lansley, just to wrap this up, I think we've all learned that, you know, when it comes to transfers, we don't really believe anything managers say around this time of year, and they lie, and you can't blame them. Or we all assume they lie anyway. But Villas-Boas has come out, and he said, well, we're two players short because Alex and Nicholas and Elka are gone or will be going, and then we're going to be two players short because we're going to lose Kalou and Drogba. Kalou's case, I wonder if he knows who he is, but that's a whole other issue. But we're only planning on making one signing, and that's going to be a central defender. I want to get from you, A, do you believe him? Should they make more signings? Should they try to move more people out? And B, does it make sense to sign a central defender instead of a right back? Because I'm not really a Bisingua guy, and Paulo Ferreira, obviously, even though he came on with his very fetching mask at the end of the Fulham game, he's obviously, you know, not got that much in the tank.
Well, do they lie? I think things change, you know, from day to day. So managers might not always be a lie. When Harry Redknapp tells us no one's coming in, of course he's not lying. but also they've got to be diplomatic about things. They don't know how much is coming, you know.
But there's a difference between saying like, well, we'll see who we sign, and saying we'll sign a central defender, but nobody else. I mean, would they? If I'm a good central defender, right? Unless I go and I sign a youngster, I look at Chelsea and like figure, okay, you give me a lot of money to come here, but I've got, you know, John Terry, the England captain, ahead of me. I've got David Luiz of the club, who's young, who the club has invested a lot of money on. You know, if Bisingua plays well, Brana is going to be the alternative central defender.
Mm.
What kind of a good central defender would want to come to Chelsea knowing that his chances of starting are going to be very, very limited?
Honestly, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if he's got plans to move David Luiz into a position where he can do less damage, you know. I mean, he's a magnificent technician. I mean, there's no two ways about that. But the Gary Neville thing holds good, you know. He's just not playing on a...
I think that's tough. What he said is just a bit silly. I don't want to get into it. Villas-Boas shouldn't have got into it with Neville, but...
Yeah.
The guy is not disciplined.
Yeah.
Fine. But
you're talking about Gary Neville's not disciplined.
No,
as a pundit.
I'm saying Luiz is not disciplined as a defender, but it's not a 10-year-old, maybe a 16-year-old.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's fair enough. The voice of reason.
All right. Well, we talk about sort of positions and what the best position is, and then you come across Manchester United, who I run out of superlatives with Sir Alex Ferguson in terms of his ability to move things around. I don't know whether, I mean, for those who don't know, he finished the game against Wigan at the weekend with a back four of where he had a winger, Valencia, at right back. He had a not particularly quick central midfielder, Michael Carrick, in central defence. He had a tiny left back alongside him in central defence, Patrice Evra. And he had somebody named Ezekiel Friars, who I believe is a teenage defender. A teenage defender at left back. In midfield, he had a guy who was 38, I might add.
Yeah.
Now, on the one hand, I want to praise United's incredible spirit and the fact that you can move them around and play them out of position and it still works. Mm. Flip side also is, this happened 2 years ago as well, that he had this massive injury crisis and he had to play Carrick at the back and whatever. And remember the game where Giggs played left but played at fullback? The flip side of this too is, should he maybe be taking a little bit look at his preparation and the way his players physically train and stuff? Because it's not normal to have so many injuries and to be, you know, desperately running for cover. I know if we were in Italy right now, they would be taking whoever United's fitness coach is, and they would be hammering him. We're not in Italy. We're in a much healthier country in that sense. But we don't even know who United's fitness coach is.
You haven't even
mentioned. You probably know.
Well, you haven't even mentioned the purchases of Michael Owen and Owen Hargreaves. They actually go out and buy players with poor fitness records. So I would say that the scout has to be hauled in along with the chief medical officer if you're going to go down that route. But I think it's just. I mean, I hate to sound like PR man for Manchester United, but I would rather look at that as a magnificent management.
That's what
Ferguson.
I mean. There's two ways to look at it, right?
I mean, I think I've seen Valencia play right back twice in the last two games. And I'll tell you, he looks like he's played right back all his life. You know, you normally get a forward defending, and he's fine going forward. But when they're trying to turn him and twist him, he panics and he doesn't know when to stand off and jump in. Valencia never makes a mistake. He's fantastic. Carrick is... I mean, at the moment, Carrick's come back to form, and if he carries on with that form, he's going to have an Indian summer to his career to remember.
Watching Scott Parker play in the Euros.
If he continues to play as he's playing now, he will be in the squad without any question at all, especially if he continues to show that he can stand in at central defence. So I think... you know, I think there are positives there as well. And I think Manchester United, the way they're coming into form is absolutely ominous. Absolutely. If I were Manchester City, with all my money, with all my squad, my bum would be squeaking.
I've got a bit of a theory on that as well, Paddy, on these players playing out of position. It so much depends on the opposition, doesn't it?
Yes.
So if you've got Wigan at home, who are, you know, bust a gut to get very good single points over Christmas, and they're coming to Old Trafford, then Carrick, your anchor midfielder playing at centre-half, he will play in the same position against weaker opponents.
Yes.
Valencia at right-back is actually playing right midfield.
No, especially when... sorry if I jump in there, but especially when Wigan don't have a... when their one striker gets sent off ridiculously,
And I did think that they stood off. I think they were over-cautious. They defended far too deep, even with 10 men. I thought Wigan's performance was supine. You know, you are allowed to head the ball away. You are allowed to intervene. And I thought that their performance was far too passive, even in the circumstances.
Three things, and then I'll let you come back in, Peter, because I know you didn't finish your thought.
That's
but
okay.
Valencia, I think he's better at right back than as a winger, just because I don't think he's good enough to be a winger, to beat people. He's got speed, he can cross, but okay, basic, but that's it. Second thing is, it astounds me how Manchester United continue to be this good with the central midfield they have, who I consider to be really average technical players.
Who is the central midfield?
Exactly. Well,
it keeps changing.
It keeps changing because of all the injuries you were talking about. But whatever best midfield you have there, the center two, there's no one that really would get into the best teams in Europe. No one. Yeah. And the third thing is, I still think United are going to come out on top. I predicted it in the beginning of the season. season. I've been insulted in my blogs on CNN when I say it. I don't think Manchester City have the experience and they have the know-how of how to come out on top. Peter, and back to you.
There is, sorry, Pete. I promise you I will no, shut
it's
up
okay.
now. But I was just going to say, if we're talking about Manchester United's central midfield, you just watch the improvement when Tom Cleverley comes back.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm. He is the guy who they should invest in.
He's a terrific player.
Technically, he's above average. Yep. Definitely.
Sorry, Pete.
No, that's right. It evolves, doesn't it? But also, I mean, what Everett's been saying about team spirit, and it sounds like a cliche, but it doesn't stop it being true, and that is that this United group has evolved together, and they pull for each other and everything, and you can't just buy 20 superstars and expect them to have that same level of unity that United are displaying at the moment.
Yeah, you know what, on that point, and sorry, and this is my homage to Christopher Hitchens here, the late Christopher Hitchens, I'm going to be a bit contrarian here. On the team spirit point, obviously, I've always taken it as read that they seem to have this great team spirit. I disagree with you a tiny bit, though, on this idea that they've all come through together, blah, blah, blah. Because in reality, there's been a lot of upheaval on this team. I mean, you know, when you look at it, obviously, Welbeck wasn't there a year ago. Cleverley's new. De Gea's new. Ashley Young is new. Jones is new. Smalling's been there less than a year. So it's not as if, like, they've all been through battle together. It's almost like this creepy thing that Fergie does where these guys come and they put on the red shirts. And it's almost like it's not the individuals. It's those freaking shirts. Yeah. It's like Wallace and Gromit. With yes. Remember when he had those sort of robotic trousers that nobody
yeah.
You know Wallace and Gromit, right? Is that what it is?
Well, Fergie, I mean, he is the best manager, isn't he? He's proven that enough. And so that involves pulling people together and making people feel comfortable and, you know, sitting next to the right guy in the changing room. All that sort of thing comes into it. But Tom Cleverley and Welbeck and people, they've been at the club for years, haven't they, coming through? They'd have been allowed to come up and train with Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes and people. So I think that is part of an evolution.
Yes.
But yeah, I'll go with the Wallace and Gromit trousers, and Fergie is a master at that.
Well, listen, he's got the Wallace and Gromit trousers. I don't know what else he has, what kind of hex he's got with Dimitar Berbatov, because I've only spoken to Berbatov twice in my life. I can't say I know the guy, but you know, the knock on him is that he's slightly sulky, and then he walks around the pitch and he's skillful, but then Fergie doesn't seem to like him. I think
as you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
He was making, what, his second start of the season. How do you take a guy who's one of United's highest paid players, who is a superstar, and this dude just never plays? And I know they say, well, he's been injured, blah, blah. But, you know, he knows he's not first choice. He can see. I think he started a game since September, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah, 24th,
right?
Yeah.
And then the guy comes back and scores that late goal against Fulham in garbage time, whatever, and starts against Wigan. Boom, I'll just score a hat trick and be happy and contribute. How does he get, A, does he get Berbatov not to throw a strop? And B, how does he ensure that the guy can come in and play and be motivated? And some people said, oh, but you know, it's just, he wants a new contract. It can't be his new contract. I'm sure it's not his dream to live in Manchester and never play.
I think I wish Arsenal had signed him in the last window, because I honestly think I want to watch that guy every day of the week.
But you wrote a book about Sir Alex. How does he manage to push Berbatov's buttons?
Well, I think
that he can pull them out of nowhere.
I think Pete did allude to it. They really do play for a higher cause. They play for the manager, who is whether you think he's an evil genius or a father figure, he's able to make people want to run through the proverbial brick wall for him. And I can't think of another manager who could bring a guy in like that, and he'd be frothing at the mouth, determined to play as he has. It is sensational management.
Okay, I'm gonna introduce our debate here. We're gonna do things a little bit differently. I'm gonna mention two quotes from two great managers, and a third quote from Jorge Valdano, who's not really great as a manager, but he came up with a very popular idea. So, genius will always make the difference on the pitch over teamwork. And that's from one Jose Mourinho. Brian Clough says, players lose you games, not tactics. There's so much crap talked about tactics by people who barely know how to win at dominoes. So I think both these people are saying is that it's down to individuals. It's not necessarily systems. I know certain people would strongly differ with that. But I want to introduce something else also, which is Jorge Valdano had this whole quote about sort of the football of the left versus the football of the right. And in his view, the football of the right was authoritarian and organized and disciplined and, dare I say it, German, or at least living up to a stereotype. The football of the left is this wonderfully creative notion. Now, I think we all have our own concept of what left and right mean. Yes. My view, actually, football of the left is about cooperation and teamwork and putting the team first and working together. Football of the right is about individual flair and creativity and entrepreneurship on the pitch. So I've had this discussion with Valdano, actually, where we disagreed and he kind of took the point. But it's just one of those quotes I think that sounds good. But Paddy, especially when it comes to Clough, who I think obviously you and Lanza would probably have a better handle on Clough than Pedro and I would. I've only seen his teams on TV. I've read most recently Jonathan Wilson's, I'm reading Jonathan Wilson's excellent biography on Clough. He seems to say that it's down to the players, not his system.
Yes.
But I looked at that Forest side, and in terms of game-changing, obviously some very good players, Viv Anderson and Trevor Francis and the winger Robertson, but I don't think this was a side with superstar game changers, except possibly Shilton and goal.
But he bought one with Trevor Francis. But
I'm with all due respect to Trevor Francis, he's Trevor Francis. I thought actually it was Clough's system that made that side.
Well, a perfect example is when he played Trevor Francis. He played him who'd been a central striker and had become Britain's most expensive player. He immediately switched him to outside right and won the European Champions League. Well, it was called something else then, but won the Champions League against Malmo. So Clough and Taylor, I think the first thing, and Lanzers would probably agree with me on this, the first thing to understand about Brian Clough is that Brian Clough with Peter Taylor was one thing, and Brian Clough alone was a completely different thing. Brian Clough alone was a Valdano, if you like, a player who believed, a manager who believed in pure football, whereas Clough and Taylor together were very much fitting the best possible players into a system that was, to call it rigid and disciplined, would convey the wrong impression, because sometimes they entertained. But my word, they could be terrifyingly defensive and tight.
I'm not suggesting, without suggesting systems need to be defensive. You can have very attacking systems,
you
too.
You can, indeed.
It seemed to me, though, that this was, you know, the way Anderson overlapped, the way Martin O'Neill slid inside and whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, This was a tactical side, in my opinion, from what I saw. And again, I saw it from a distance years later. At a time, especially when English football wasn't particularly evolved tactically.
Yes, and I think that's fair. Lanzers, would you go along with that?
Yeah, I would, yeah. It was subtle, wasn't it? It was Clough. I mean, I was only sort of mid-teens or something when I was watching it, but I've heard a lot more about it, through Martin O'Neill's yarns over the years. But I think Clough was, he was playing down what he was actually doing brilliantly.
Yes, yes.
And it would be such subtle things, like, as you say, Paddy, Trevor Francis emerging at the back post to head in a European Cup winner when he'd been told to go out and play on the right wing, which, by the way, was partly to keep Francis's, ego and sense of team in thrall.
Yes.
And then he didn't go and play Gary Mills as a 17-year-old in a five-man midfield in the next European Cup final.
Yes.
And he made that decision apparently about 3 hours before kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that was tactical genius for the match in hand.
Mm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, Clough, when Clough talked about so much crap being talked about tactics, he wasn't talking about himself or Peter Taylor. talking about...
Turning it back, from what you guys are saying, I think we can probably agree that Clough was actually... That this quote from Clough is actually maybe slightly deceptive. He's not talking about himself, and he really was a fine tactician who, I would argue, excelled... without superstars, we can debate.
I think Clough and Taylor were a better tactician than Ferguson has ever been.
Okay, there's no need to have another go at Ferguson. I know you want to even things out after all the praise you heaped on him before.
Why not? Why else do you think I love this podcast?
But, Pedro, the Mourinho quote about genius making the difference in the pitch over teamwork. Now, if I was a cynic, I could say...
You are.
Of course Mourinho would be that, because he's been in a situation where he's always had the best players bought for him. So, and he's had the strength to put those best players on the pitch and win games. And, tactically Mourinho, and I'm in the minority in this country where many view him as some kind of tactical genius, he's solid, but he's not the second coming. Is that fair?
Well, I honestly believe that it's not true that he's always had players bought for his success, because that didn't happen at Porto when they won the UEFA Cup and the Champions League back-to-back.
Relative to the world of Portuguese football, though, it did.
Well, they still won in Europe, so Portuguese football there is really irrelevant, Gab. What I would say about Mourinho and this particular quote, and he said it in different ways before, is that he believes everything being equal, so both teams being equally well-prepared, it will be a moment of genius that will decide the game.
And if I jump in there, though,
yeah,
a key thing, all things being equal, things being prepared. So he probably also believes that he prepares his teams better than anyone else. So things are never really quite equal with him.
But just look,
teams always have the advantage.
But this actually comes back to bite him, because what has happened against Barcelona? I mean, he's prepared his team as well as he can prepare it to face this monster that is Barcelona. Yeah. And even if they're better prepared, like they were in the Super Cup, Spanish Super Cup in the beginning of the season, it was still moments of genius from Messi which decided the game. So. Look, I think we need to be balanced here and think that these managers knew that they were good. I don't think average managers would say things like this. No. Superb managers say things like this because they prepare their teams better than anyone else. And then, all variables being equal, it's that one moment of a genius player that can give you the win or defeat.
Absolutely. If you look at the two of the best teams I've ever seen, which is the current Barcelona and Sacchi's Milan, they were the most intensely organized, most hardworking and disciplined teams, both of them, that I've ever seen. And that's, they wouldn't be the two greatest teams without that. And yet, what do we remember? We remember Van Basten's
Hullet.
We remember even Eugenio's, what's his name, Savicevic's lob from the thing. We remember the moments of genius which changed the games. And of course, with Barcelona, we remember the Messi. So the answer is, Gab, To produce great football, you need both.
Getting it back to the system versus the players, and beyond the obvious argument that obviously it's better to have good players than bad players. I'd just like to get from each of you a reaction to what I'm about to say, which is, if it's players, does the manager matter that much? In other words, if Steve Bruce, in fact, I'll make this very simple. If Steve Bruce managed Real Madrid right now, would he have a shot at winning the Champions League? Would he finish second in La Liga or even first?
No. Look, the managers, for me, actually, I think managers are underrated. This is my personal opinion, because they have to create the conditions for players to excel. They have to be organized, they have to instill the correct mentality, and they have to make the players comfortable to express themselves on the pitch. I really believe that a manager sometimes, if he tries to do too much, if he does too little, he's going to hinder the players. I personally think that just like many times a manager in our jobs can motivate a team to do something well or do something poorly. In that way, I would never, never say that a manager is overrated.
Paddy, Steve yep. Bruce at Real Madrid? How would he get on?
Well,
I'm not big on Steve Bruce, but I'm talking,
I
purposely chose Steve Bruce,
saying,
not an
if,
awful
if you're
manager.
Saying a sort of middle-range English Premier League manager,
yeah.
Is he as good as Jose Mourinho?
Not is
no.
he as good, is how much worse no. would he be at Real Madrid? Would Real Madrid still finish second? Would they still challenge for the Champions League?
I think they would finish second, yes, because unfortunately the way the Spanish League is at the moment, it's quite difficult for Real Madrid not to finish.
Would they
the
still make
two.
A strong challenge for the Champions League?
No. I don't think they would. Jose Mourinho is an outstanding manager, probably one of the best that has ever been in my lifetime. And I think his only misfortune at the moment, if it could be described as such, is to be up against arguably the best club team I've seen in my lifetime as well in Barcelona. So, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And to compare, to try to compare any manager in England, Ferguson included, with Jose Mourinho is bound to be unkind. So I think in his case he's probably more important than any player, Cristiano included, at Real Madrid.
Okay, I so strongly disagree on that point, but that's an argument for another time. Lanza, you get the final word on this. You saw Steve Bruce up close at Birmingham City, so you can, and I know how popular he is there for the classy way in which his arrival and departure from the club were handled. But how would he do at Real Madrid in Mourinho's shoes?
Okay, well, if he was taking over now and you wanted them to sustain until the end of the season what they're capable of doing, I think he would be fine. But I think if
it's the old Avram Grant argument.
Yeah, exactly. But if you want to build on it and improve time beyond, then no. I think the manager is really, really important. And the little nuggets of wisdom that someone like Martin O'Neill might come out with at just the right moment to just make...
Sorry. I know your feelings about Martin O'Neill, but I ask you about Bruce and Mourinho.
Yeah.
How do you come up with Martin O'Neill?
Well, because I'm now going into the general conclusion, since you would kind enough to give me the last word.
Yes, sorry.
No, and just say that what the manager says at the right point to the right player to motivate him within the team shape is absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
All right, enough of that. Time now for some quick hits. Arsenal were supposed to move to the top four by beating Wolves, but Wayne Hennessy spoiled it all by saving everything in sight and helping 10-man Wanderers hang on for a point at the Emirates. Does Wenger need more firepower? And if so, what is the profile of the player he ought to be signing?
A Marouan Chamakh that works. In other words, and I thought Chamakh was going to be the answer at centre forward, allowing Van Persie to play more as a number 10, which he should do, a goal scoring number 10. So I would say a centre forward, I'd go for Dimitar Berbatov, as I would have done. I kept urging him to sign last window. Failing that, Bobby Zamora.
Bobby Z, how about that? Battling Blackburn Rovers grab a point at Anfield with, as Steve Keane helpfully reminded us not once but three times, five players aged 22 or younger, and not just a Hanley, but a Henley as well. Lansley, is this God rewarding Keane for all the crap he's been through, or is it Liverpool's fault for creating dozens of chances but never finishing them off?
No, this is God preparing Keane to build Blackburn into a very competent championship side. It's merely down to the fact that Liverpool missed so many chances and only put away 8.2% of their goal attempts.
There you go, Lanza giving you the science. Tottenham win at Norwich 2-0 to consolidate third place. Plus, they have a game in hand. Pedro, I trust you weren't one of the wise men who predicted a top three finish for Harry this year?
I wasn't. I thought it'd be Man U, Man City, Chelsea and Liverpool in my top four. But Gareth Bale continues to improve, and Emmanuel Adebayor is just making such a big difference up front, holding up the ball in that system, allowing Bale, Modric and Van der Vaart to excel. So I'm not surprised now.
Percentage chance Spurs finish top three?
70.
Wow. Manchester City are held to a scoreless draw by West Bromwich Albion. Paddy, you can point out flaws in Roberto Mancini's approach, or you can praise a tactical nous of one Roy Hodgson, or if you can be succinct enough, you can do both. The choice is yours.
Thank you very much. I'll go for Roy Hodgson. I think he's made a terrific difference at West Bromwich. It's interesting that chucking him out of Liverpool has improved both Liverpool and West Bromwich in equal measure. Terrific manager. And West Brom was superbly organised at the weekend.
Isn't it funny? How about stereotypes, right? West Brom get rid of the Italian manager for being way too attacking and disorganized, and they find organization and defensive nous in the English guy. Were it not for a horrid decision from Howard Webb, Martin O'Neill would have made it three wins in four since taking over at the Stadium of Light. Lansley, I know you don't like to criticize referees, but I also know you've got a certain simpatico going for Mr. O'Neill. What was your take? Also, shouldn't we be having a go, or actually crucifying Leon Osman for appealing the penalty and luring Webb into making a wrong decision?
It quite obviously wasn't a penalty, that's for sure, because Lee Cattermole was just running behind. He couldn't get near enough Osman to bring him down fully. But do you know what? I think there was the merest touch there, accidental touch, in which Osman lost his touch because one... You know that thing at school where you just kick one heel and it goes against the other? I think that accidentally happened, and that's why Osman fell. So don't have a go at Osman, but it wasn't a penalty either.
Wait, so, sorry, was the touch was from who? Osman touching himself? Oh, yeah, I don't mean in that way. No, if Cattermole touched him, it's a penalty.
No, Cattermole's running behind him, right?
So who was the touch from?
And then Osman, running ahead of Cattermole, his back left heel flicks very slightly against Cattermole, and that forces Osman's left foot to go into the back of his right calf and bring himself down.
So Cattermole, in the act of shooting on goal, Osman, in the act of shooting on goal,
yeah,
with his back lift, touches Cattermole,
yeah,
and then kicks the ball into the ground, and then gets angry, and Webb gives the penalty.
Yeah.
Wow, that one's new to me.
You,
but
you know at school when you just tap someone's one ankle as they're walking,
yeah,
and it makes it go against the other ankle, and down they go. But I don't think Cattermole intended.
Do you know, Lances, I reckon if you were here, Gab would give you a tap on the ankle for saying that.
No, this is the best. I guarantee you have not heard this explanation anywhere else, and that's what makes the game podcast so great.
That's brilliant.
Demba Ba now has scored 21 goals in 29 appearances for Newcastle and West Ham in 2011. That's Premier League appearances, the ones that matter. Pedro, I know nobody's going to give credit to poor old Avram Grant for signing him, but how is it possible that a guy comes out of virtually nowhere, no disrespect to Hoffenheim, and is a second leading scorer in the supposedly toughest league in the world?
The fact that people would think he came from nowhere means that they don't pay attention to what's going on in Europe.
Because
this guy, this guy was really good with Vedad Ibizovic when they actually challenged for the title a few years ago in Germany. They finished seventh. His goal scoring record is superb in the Premier League. He's a fantastic forward leading the line. Look out for Moussa Sow from Lille to be someone very similar if he comes over here.
Gab, now one for you. Carlo Ancelotti is rumoured to be the next Paris Saint-Germain manager. Is he the man to take them to the top?
Well, obviously, he'll have a tremendous arsenal of players to choose from. A lot of ingredients are in place. Beckham, Leonardo. It'll be just like AC Milan circa 2008. Why not? He hasn't actually taken the job yet. I was in contact with him, and he used the euphemism. He said, "Well, we've had plenty of possession, but no shots on goal yet." So we'll see what actually happens. It's an incredible experiment that's going on there. You feel a bit sorry for Comboiré. They were top of the league, but they'd also been playing awful football. And I think that played into it. For that kind of task, I don't think that there's a better option than Carlo Ancelotti right now. That's all we've got time for this week. But remember, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can also follow us all on Twitter. Pedro's on Twitter, at PedroCNN. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
There you go. We can welcome Pedro, of course, to the Game Podcast family as well. Till next week. Bye-bye.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.